Hey guys, welcome back to the Homework Assignment Podcast. I'm your host, RJ Patino, and today we are very excited for our guest speaker. We have Derek Price here. Derek is, one, a huge role model in society. He wears a ton of hats. He's been through a crazy amount of things in his life, from owning different companies to playing in the NFL, and we're really excited to hear from him today. So welcome, Derek.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's really exciting. So why don't you give us a background on who is Derek Price?
It's a big book. So yes. if you dial in for the hour-long version, like, okay, this is where it's going to go. So now I'll give you the truncated and we can kind of pick it apart.
Perfect.
So Derek grew up here. I'm local, right? Grew up in Tempe. Right. Obviously, you know my wife very, very, very well. We'll get into that. And grew up in that, not a lot of money, so the way forward was work and effort. You know, start out with paper route, age three, and work, third grade and all that kind of stuff. And ultimately, that led to me wanting to go to college and not having any money. So figuring out that, how do I solve for that entry into college without any money? Yeah. Come with a family, just don't have any money. And it was sports. So I put all my time into sports, and it opened up into getting a scholarship to University of Iowa, and I was able to play there. Got my degree and then went on, played in the NFL for Detroit Lions, and broke my neck. And they said, you don't get to do this game anymore. So like plan A out the window, right? Yeah. And, you know, it's metaphoric to like a great business shift, because sometimes we think we're going this way and then like the tides turn, or, so you know, 2008 hits and, you know, whatever, and the world gets disrupted. So like quick pivot. So I go from, hey, I'm going to do this NFL thing for the next 10, 15 years of my life and just sit on a beach after that, too. Hey man, one play one time, and now this is no longer an option, right? Yeah. Like, you don't get to do this game anymore.
So abrupt.
So I went to my spine surgeon, who they, you know, Detroit referred me to, and the guy was actually saying, like, hey man, like, had you gone to a chiropractor with the specific problem you have and the way that you're hitting, your neck was straight, and if it had a curve in it, it wouldn't have broke the way that it broke, and you should have went to a chiropractor. And I, being young and naive, didn't know anything about anything at the time. So I remember, like, vividly, I remember like what he was wearing. I remember like the room we were in. I remember, you know, everything about it. I looked at him. I was like, oh yeah, like, you know, was he gonna rub like chicken blood in my ear or put a crystal on my forehead? I didn't know anything about it. And I remember him looking at me. This is like a world-renowned spine surgeon. Like, I just shared the waiting room with Shaquille O'Neal and Lottie Divac. Like, high level guys. And like, I was the third guy to see him that day. And those were the two people in front of me. And he looks at me and he's like, that's a really naive statement. And just kind of walked out of the room. And I was like, I just offended the guy that has me on a table, you know, in 2 days, cutting my neck open to try and fix things. Anyway, so I go through the surgery, you know, and, you know, that kind of stuck with me. Like, it was a very profound moment. Like, the man gave me advice and I kind of crapped on it, and you know, kind of called me on it. So I go through the surgery, I go back to Detroit, and they're like, hey, you don't get to do this game anymore. You have plates and screws in your neck. And at the time, we were still allowed to like hit people with our face and our head, and, you know, like
the old school way,
old school, like breaking helmets, right? It's just a different game. And that was kind of my thing. And so like, you don't get to do this anymore. So, okay, cool. Quick pivot. Bobby Ross actually called me in his office, and which was the head coach at the time. He's like, hey, look, you got like a couple years on your contract. You know, you're a good dude. You can ride this out. We'll put you on the sidelines. You can travel with the team. You can kind of live the entourage. You can live the life, but like, you're never going to play it again, and you're never going to be on the field. Lloyd's in London won't insure you, et cetera. What do you want to do? And as soon as he said, like, you never get to play it again, I was like, well, I'm not an entourage kind of guy. So I said, hey, man, I'm out of here. Thanks very much. Shook his hand, and we were good. Peaced out right there. So it's kind of like, you know, jumping out of the airplane, no parachute. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go figure this out. Like, I had my degree, but it was kind of like, I have my degree and I'm gonna go play football. And then it's like, now football's over and I have a degree. It's like, I never really thought about what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I remember as soon as I got back to Arizona from Detroit after that meeting, and I was like, what do I want to do? And that chiropractic thing kind of stuck in my, like, what is this? I didn't know what it was. So found the closest chiropractor to my house. It's this guy, Jeff Glaus, over at Preferred Chiropractic over on McClintock in Guadalupe. So I just walk in and I was like, what do you do? Like, I don't know what you guys do. And what I witnessed was this amazing, you know, atmosphere of people that were having fun, and they were moving, and they were doing exercise, and they were talking nutrition and diet and holistic. And it was very like in alignment with my core beliefs, like movement and take care of yourself and stay away from the drugs and surgery if you don't have to do it, and do everything that you can. And like, I just really liked it and I vibed with it. And it was very positive. You had good music playing and like ESPN Sports Center was on. Like, it just, it felt like a gym to me, which felt like home. And so I was like, I'm gonna go check this out. So I would say that I went online, but there wasn't really online back then. Like, as crazy as that sounds, you like, some of your listeners are like, what do you mean? Like, no, I'd like pick up the phone and call people and have them mail me, you know, information.
Okay.
And so it turns out, like, I'm like, yeah, man, I'm gonna go do this. And I had a BA, and basically my prereqs had some BS that I had to get through. Like organic chem 1-2.
So wait, real quick, classes. How old were you at this
point? I am 24.
Okay, at this point, so right after that, after this,
yeah, like, okay, like immediate. Like, I spent 1 month at home, and I was then back out, back in school. Back, went back to Iowa, and I'd already graduated, but I needed to get like a couple courses to get into chiropractic college, which is another 4-year program.
Got it.
And so I go back and knock those out, and then I move down to Atlanta and do the chiropractic school. That was great, and I learned a ton, and I come out, opened up practice one, which turned into me getting practice two and practice three and four, and vertically integrating, and then starting to realize, why would I refer this out when I can own this?
Okay.
And so it started the, you know, I brought physical therapists in, and pain management doctors and orthopedic doctors and massage and acupuncture and diet and nutrition. I just kept stacking and vertically integrating, and starting opening up clinics around the state and around other states. Texas, California, Alaska, other places, and culminated into a large orthopedic clinic over by the time I was kind of done with that musculoskeletal side, and then got to a point where it was kind of in managerial mode, and I honestly kind of lost my interest to some degree. Like, I trained everybody really well. It was running very easily. It was very efficient, and whether I went in or didn't go in didn't matter. I wasn't seeing patients.
So the challenge was gone.
The challenge removed itself.
Yeah.
And something about me, which is blessing and curse, is when the challenge goes away, the interest goes away, and the interest goes away, I go somewhere else.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so the challenge goes away, and you know, I thought to myself, like, okay, I want to go back to doing coaching, because all along this path, I had been doing Ironman races and triathlons and swimming the English Channel and Alcatraz and doing these other things, and I found this crucible called SEALFIT. And I went through one of their programs called Kokoro, which is like a BUDS, a Navy SEAL, like a Hell Week simulation.
Okay.
Run by SEALs. And it's like, you know, 3 days of no sleeping. You're cold and wet and just beating you down the whole time. It's just, listen, I don't recommend it for anybody. Sounds unless you're like, I want to go be a SEAL. And if you don't want to go be a SEAL, like, don't go do it. And so I go through that process, and I'm going a little bit sideways here, but I go through that process, and they're like, hey, you know, you did great. And actually, the crazy thing was, my main instructor was a guy named Glenn Doherty, which if you ever seen the movie 13 Hours, he was the CEO that got blown up on top of the roof. Like, that was my first entry into that world.
Okay.
Was they called him Bub. And now there's a big protein company called Bubs that Sean Lake, my buddy, owns. But yeah, he was my first guy and like really set me on this course. And he's like, hey, man, they gave me the Honor Man Award for the camp and all this stuff. And I was like, hey, I'm too old to go be a SEAL. It's not really my life. And they're like, well, why'd you show up at this thing? Because at the time, that's kind of, it was a feeder program. And I was like, I just wanted to be around a locker room of like-minded human beings. Because when you leave high-level sport, or when you leave any sport, you leave a tribe of humans that, where iron sharpens iron, you're all doing the same thing. You have a very clear mission.
Lifestyle.
A lifestyle.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you find yourself outside of that lifestyle. But that train is still going. You're just not on it. You're still friends with everybody on the train, but you're not on the train anymore. And you're like, where's my identity? And I'm kind of missed that brotherhood. And when that brotherhood goes away, it's hard to find it. And especially, and we can talk about this, I'm sure, later on in business, it's hard to find that brotherhood. And that's kind of what I created. And I know we're going there. So I found it there. And they asked me, hey, you know, if you're not going to go be a SEAL, we at least come back and mentor and help out. And so I do. And I did that for like 10 years and, you know, ran hundreds of camps around the world, everything from shooting to fitness camps to just physical crucible, swim camps, all this kind of stuff. And I loved it. And so when I was done with, you know, the orthopedic and the chiro stuff side here, I was like, I'm just going to go into coaching full time. Like, I'll still do the adventures, the stuff we just talked about, but I like working with individuals. That's what got me into chiropractic. Like, what's your problem? Let's do the solution together and Let's find a road forward, right? And as I go to make that move, my first client is a national publicly traded hospital company called American Addiction Centers. And they call me up and said, hey man, we got this hospital in Vegas and it, you know, it's a $100 million hospital, revenue producer, but like the doctors hate the nurses and the nurses won't talk to the case managers and the case managers are on strike against the social workers. And just a complete chaos, right? Yeah. Just absolute toxicity. And of course I'm like, that's my jam, right? Because I'm a systems, leadership and programs type of person. I was like, let's go. But halfway through our like conversation about taking on a consulting role to coach them, you know, the owner just goes of the whole company, he goes, well, can you just be the CEO of this hospital? And I was like, well, let's start with, I don't know anything about behavioral health and addiction. This is a behavioral health addiction hospital. I know everything about, you know, musculoskeletal. I can go through like feet, knees, back, toes, legs, shoulders, like all that stuff. But you're talking about like the mind. I was still stuck in the same stigma as most people are, that, you know, if you're depressed, be happy. And if you're an addict, just stop drinking and the problem goes away. I've since learned different. So anybody listening that caught that, like, it's different. I know. Trust me, I know. So I step in and say, hey, man, I've never done this. And it seems like a heck of a challenge. Let's go. Like, I'll be a CEO of a big publicly traded company and let's go do this. And what I didn't know stepping into it was they were embarking upon starting Chapter 11 bankruptcy filings.
Oh, wow.
They were in debt, not having paid vendors. And, you know, I can go on and on, air all the dirty laundry, but basically they had already gone off the cliff and there was like a fingernail holding it back up. So I enter this situation as, oh, this is going to be great, like great for me and I'm going to learn. And I realize like, well, the learning curve doesn't exist. Like you have to save this as of like today.
Holy cow.
And this is probably one of my greatest leadership lessons I'm about to drop right here. So I go in, CEO, three-piece suit, you know, looking the part of a hospital administrator. And I go in the first day on the job. And to tell you what it was all about is I walk in the first day and I go to the front desk and they're like, can we help you? And I was like, well, I think I'm the new CEO here, you know? And they're like, oh, well, we didn't even know we had one. You know, like it was just so chaotic. And yeah. The HR lady shows me my room or whatever. And so I don't know anybody, a couple hundred staff members. I don't know anybody, a couple hundred patients. So I'm like, I'm gonna go walk around. Like I've never been to this facility, I'm gonna check it out. And I'm walking around, I'm like, man, it's really just dirty. Like it's just cigarette butts, like in addiction hospitals, a lot of people smoke, just cigarettes everywhere. And so I asked somebody, I go, hey, a lot of trash everywhere. And they're like, ah, it's just how it kind of always is. You know, we stopped paying the vendors a while ago and now they won't come out and pick up the trash or whatever. Okay, good copy. So I come in the next day. I'm still trying to impress everybody. So it's one of the few times you're going to find me in a suit and a tie. And I walk in and I walk right past my desk and I go right into the janitorial closet and grab a bag and gloves and I walk right back out the front door. Don't talk to anybody because I don't know anybody yet. And I just start picking up trash. Didn't say anything, just start picking up cigarette butts. And unbeknownst to me, the previous CEO who was fired to make room for me drives by and pulls his camera out and takes pictures. And then texts it to the entirety of the staff at this hospital that I'm at.
Oh, wow.
You guys are so bad and times are so horrible and I'm so glad I left. You're a sinking ship. Your CEO's out picking up trash. Like that's how terrible you guys are. Is that look at you? You got this new CEO is an idiot. He's out there picking up trash. I didn't know any of this was happening. The next day, I come back in and there's a line to get to my door. Oh, people want to meet me. And they were lined up to say like, I will follow you. And I was like, why is that? Like, we don't even know each other. And they're like, because you didn't come in and tell anybody what to do. You just came in and started doing the things that needed to get done. And you didn't tell other people to do it, which you absolutely in your position could do. You start doing it. And the best thing that other guy did when he left was sending that back to everybody, because immediately people want to follow somebody that is going to do what they're asking others to do. Like, don't ask somebody to do something that you're not willing to do yourself. Mm-hmm. and lead by example, not by talk, verbal barf, right? So the best buy-in I ever got in any leadership position was when I went outside and picked up trash and didn't say anything to anybody, and it got back to all of them, and it had exactly the opposite effect that I think that this previous guy thought was going to happen. They were like, we can get behind this guy. And as a result of that, I had their ear and buy-in from like basically day one. We put some systems in place and some checks and balances, mended some fences, basically brought some communication patterns back together, got rid of the toxicity, and turned the corner, right? And as we're turning the corner, we're like, man, we're moving away from bankruptcy, and this is amazing. We're turning a profit, and everybody's happy, and their jobs are secure, and everything's going well. COVID is like, check this out, right?
Oh, my gosh.
So COVID comes in and like goes kaboom. And the, you know, the state comes in and says, you guys are the biggest hospital in town, so we're going to learn how to do this COVID thing on your facility. So let's start by like just locking all the doors and putting everybody in quarantine. And we're like, yeah, that's not how like a hospital like this, you want to take people with anxiety and depression and lock them in. Like, so let me tell you how bad of an idea that is. So all in as much to say, and to speed the story along, things go very well. And about 4 years in, I decide, hey, man, I've played this game. It's sort of on autopilot. I love it. I love the opportunity. But I want to go back to coach. I want to go back and I want to start my coaching. So I do my resignation thing and give them 90 days. And headhunters hear about things like who knows how they hear about it, but they do.
Yeah.
And so they come calling. And another company, Acadia Healthcare, and a really big one of their crown jewel hospitals, says, hey, will you come be the CEO of this hospital? And I was like, well, it's a step up. It's a bigger platform. It puts more microphones in my face. It lets me share my passion for helping people more. Yeah, I'll go do that. Sounds good. So I jump on that train.
Were they in Vegas too?
No, they're in Arizona. So it brings me back to Arizona. Yeah. So that was the selling point, really. And so, I'm going to go do that, right? Bigger platform, bigger challenge, bigger spotlight. Kind of the crown jewel of the whole $7 billion market cap healthcare, system. Let's go do it. And so I cruise along there. And this is where like life gets interesting. This is where Faction Foundation comes from. I have a really good buddy who had an exit. He built a company and sold a company and put a considerable, like 8 figures in his pocket on his exit. And for the first month, he was like, Richie Rich. Bought every toy, bought like 2 more houses and another boat and whatever. And every time I called him, he's like, man, I'm going here. We're going to the Bahamas and I booked a jet and
Just living the life.
And then a month later, I call him up. I'm like, how you doing? And he's like, bro, I'm miserable. And I was like, what? Like, I'm trying to wrap my head around how are you finding misery right now? And he's like, I have no compass heading. I have all the money in the world. I just went and bought all the toys I ever want. And I don't have to wake up in the morning anymore. I have no purpose. I don't see a way forward. I don't know what. Like I'm in a glorious paradise of a harbor with nobody and nothing to do. And I don't know what to do. So I happen to be going down to Disney World. My daughter, Sadie, dances. She's on the Highland Palm team, and they were going to Nationals again because they're amazing. So Heather, my wife, and I we're going down there for this trip. And so I say, hey, man, why don't you meet me down here? Dave, why don't you meet me down here? Bring your wife and let's hang out. We'll get a big suite and hang out. So we do. And as I'm in between watching Sadie do her dance thing or whatever, I'm meeting with Dave and his wife and Heather. And I go through this like glorious like coaching platform, like totally break everything down, gets crystal clear and deliver a plan that basically ended up with like a couple main premises as of number one is, you have to start everything by, it has to be passion driven or it's going to be short lived. Like follow your passion, number one. Sounds cliche, everybody says that. Number two is do it with people that you love and people that you want to be around. You're in a driver's seat now, follow your passion and do it with people that you love. And number three is do something that changes the needle, moves the needle, change the game, impact the world, make the world 1% better than the way you found it. Help people, do something that enriches society. And then for him, number four, I said, and if it monetizes, great, but if it doesn't matter. You have more money than you'll ever spend or could ever give away. It doesn't matter at this point in time. So do something passion-driven do it with the people that you love and make the world a better place. And what had happened there was he had a perspective shift, right? So his half empty went to half full.
Right.
And his, I have all this stuff kind of like, listen, all material things fade away. If you don't believe me right now, think about what'd you get for your last three birthdays in a row? And everybody listening right now is wondering, okay, now what were your last three vacations? You know exactly where you were, who you're with, and what you did.
Right.
We remember experience. We don't remember things.
Exactly.
So we accumulated a lot of things and then the newness wore off. And so now we're sitting in this position where, you know, I give him that great advice and we get on the plane and I'm flying home and Sadie's flying home with the team and Heather's sitting next to me and I'm already working, you know, doing my work for the hospital and got my headphones in and, you know, whatever. And Heather's trying to talk to me. You know, I'm a God bless her. I love her. But like, you know, I'm doing the thing where I pull out one earbud and I'm like,
yeah, half listening.
Okay. What are you asking me now? Yes. The clouds are super beautiful. Yeah. No, I don't think the plane's going to crash. Turbulence is normal. You know, those kind
of
questions.
My wife's listening. I'm not the only one.
Okay? Yeah. Like I super love you, but I'm trying to do this, but, oh really? If you had to re-wallpaper the bathroom, this is what you would use. Like, oh, that's amazing. Thanks for telling me that.
Yeah, that's your input.
But then she hits me with this. She goes, man, that was so good what you did to Dave. Like you really shifted him around. It was because she knows I coach a lot, but she never in the room. She doesn't see it. Yeah. Right. And this was the first time that like, she sat there and watched like the whole progression soup to nuts. And she was just like kind of enamored and impressed and like being nice, being a great spouse and wife. And she's like, man, pat me on the back. And then she's like, so like with everything that you said, like, where's your passion for what you do? How would you answer that? And my answer was, it went like this. Oh, you know, I like my job, whatever. And I put my earbud in, I went back to typing. But like that question sat in me in a way that I was like, oh man, I ask people all the time. I break people down all the time. I tell them what to do all the time. I listen and advise all the time. And very infrequently, does anybody ask me these types of questions?
Right.
And much less do I ask the question that then gets brought back to me to examine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that question comes back to me and I'm sitting with it. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not passionate about what I do. I'm comfortable. They pay me a lot of money. I have this great title. I'm a CEO, this big publicly traded thing. They put me on stage. They give me these great titles. They afford me all these opportunities. I'm just comfortable. And I said, well, why would I not be passionate about that? And I realized that when I got into healthcare is I wanted to do like what we're doing right now. I wanted to speak to you. I want you to be knee to knee, glove to glove, like shoulder to shoulder to somebody and say, hey, let's look at your individual scenario and let's reverse engineer where we want to get to. Let's figure out problem, let's figure out solution, and let's figure out the gap, right? And sometimes that's stuff I can do, and sometimes I'm going to refer you to other people that do this way better than me, which is another great business thing. Don't do everything for everybody. Be the guy that refers. And I realized that as my healthcare career advanced, I went from my passion, which was like RJ comes in with an issue, I help RJ. RJ's wife then comes in because RJ and I have a trust bond because I helped him honestly. And she comes in and I help and I help and I meet families and I get satiety. I get like that spiritual satiety that says, hey man, you go to bed tonight knowing that you helped people. You made a difference, right?
Yep.
Small impact, but like
add up.
It's pebble in a pond. And by the time I got to the end of my healthcare career, I was exactly the opposite of that. Like as a CEO of a big healthcare company, I'm never sitting with patients. I don't even walk in the same halls that you walk. They don't even want me to have access with you anymore. They don't want you to be able to get to me, right? And now I'm serving a different master. I'm serving the board. I'm serving shareholders. Mm. And I start looking at the job like my wins and my bonuses come from looking at like, well, the patients are spending $10 a day at lunch or the hospital is to feed them on the PPD, price per patient day. If I can get this to $8, then I can take that $2 per person per day and put it over on this side of the line and my EBITDA contribution comes up. And if my EBITDA contribution comes up, then my bonus kicks up. So I got to a position where for me to be successful, meant I was taking from the patient experience.
Hmm.
For me to be successful, Matt, I was not giving or granting or allowing for raises. For me to be successful, I wasn't spending a certain amount of CapEx so I could keep it on the budget. So I wasn't, it was almost like I was here's why I'm not giving you the raise and let me play this shell game about well, yeah, we're going to give it to you. And if I can cut resources from the patient that costs money and find a cheaper way to do it, cheaper drug, cheaper bed, cheaper sheets, like maybe wash the linen once a day instead of twice a day, like all of those things, like this group is happy. And this is the group who I now work for.
Yeah.
And all of this happens like inside of a week. And at the end of the week, it's decided, I don't do this anymore. And they're a great company. And we had an amicable separation. And I just, you know, kind of shook hands, walked out, said, I just don't do this anymore. I love you. You're great. You're amazing. Hey, we're all good. Everybody, you know, high five. This is just not me anymore. And they're cool. They understood, right? Hey, man, we get it where you're coming from. And they're amazing. They backfill like this fast. No big deal, right? Yeah. They're amazing. There's a laundry list of probably better talent than me that could fill that role in overnight. But again, I find myself jumped out of the airplane, no parachute, right? And so this is really cool. I have a certain circle of friends that I call them, and imagine this. Like, they know how much money I was getting paid and the titles and all the stuff that go with it. And I call these guys and I go, hey, man. And they're like, dude, what's up? You're calling me in middle day? It's weird. I go, yeah, dude, I walked out. I'm not doing this job anymore. Just quit my job. And they're like, awesome. Like, not, oh my gosh, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Rethink this, go back, do this, do that. You know, it was, dude, that's awesome. Good, man. I was wondering when you were going to do that. Like, what are you going to do now? Like, just immediately right into, oh, high five, knuckle bump. Like, cool, that's great. Like, how can I support you? What are you going to do? And that's what brought me to, you know, opening up Faction Foundation. And we'll dive into that. But your producer's probably like, hey, man, can you let the host talk for like at least a minute? So
nah, man, I'm
one of those guests awesome. That you're like, you get this guy going, you may never get the microphone back.
I listen to him all day.
So, no, one amazing story. I'm just getting caught up. I don't even know how much time has really passed.
Yeah.
There's just so many things that are popping in my head. Like, you know, obviously you're running, you go from the NFL, jump out of a plane, like we just talked about, to, you know, this type of lifestyle that you never even saw yourself in. Mm-hmm. Right. One thing I do want to talk about real quick, just to back up, is when you're talking about passion, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're recommending to make sure you do something that you have a passion in.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people that I've ran into, and maybe I've ran into this myself, if I actually look back, but sometimes to get started, people are really focused on like, hey, what do I want to do? What's a passion? And they focus on doing their passion more than actually, how do I put this? I might be saying this wrong. Can a business or entrepreneur do something that's a stepping stone to his passion without, I might have to back this up.
I think you're talking about like efficiency versus effectiveness. And I can be very efficient at chasing passion and not effective at monetizing it.
Okay.
And so you have a lot of entrepreneurs that go down this road of saying, man, I really love this. And if I just pour passion into this, it's going to work.
Got it. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah. And so I'll keep going down that road if you want me to.
No, yes, please. Because the biggest thing is like for me, we're in construction, right? Mm-hmm. Construction is not my passion.
Mm-hmm.
So my passion is entrepreneurship. It's helping people. It's seeing things come to life. And right. Part of the construction is great when I get to see a project from start, figure everything out, how to do it. And then we get the final product. It's like masterpiece. Amazing. Mm-hmm. I love that. But the construction isn't really the passion. It's the entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest questions we get is like, hey, well, what if what I need to do right now, what if what my resources are giving me right now, the opportunities I have right now isn't necessarily my passion. Is that still the right route? Can I turn it into a passion, or is it a stepping stone to actually get what I need to actually make my passion what I do for a living? That's, I guess that's where I was going with that. So
great, great question. Huge question. We could run like a 5-part series on that, right? And it kind of depends on who you are, what your chops are, and what your experience level is. So you've stood up a construction company, you do very well. You have a great reputation. Everybody knows who you are. You have your sign on the front of a big street. You have a lot of jobs. You're probably, you know, you're months out, if anything, I'm guessing.
It's a good guess.
That affords you to be able to put more efforts towards your passion because you still have to play in reality, right?
Yep.
Like if my passion was painting rainbows on street signs, awesome. How you monetize?
Yeah.
And if you don't have a path forward to immediately monetize, and that's your only source of revenue, where's your burn coming on the other side? So sometimes your passion might be rainbows on street signs, but you got to flip burgers to make ends meet, and you're just going to have to do that. And what a lot of people don't understand about the entrepreneurial side of the world is the risk reward of being an entrepreneur versus a W-2 employee is more, the gap is bigger than most people think. Like, everybody's like, oh, I'm going to go into business for myself. I'm like, okay, well, why is that? They're like, because I want to set my own hours. I go, well, time out. Let me tell you what this means. If you go into business for yourself, your hours are now all of them. It is all of them. It is as you fall asleep at night. It is as you wake up at night. It is Monday through Monday. There is no Saturday. There is no Sunday. You may not go to work that day, but there's, but you're processing all day, all the time. You get to set your own hours, but you're responsible for your own paycheck. You don't get to phone it in and sit behind a computer and play pretend and play Facebook when the boss walks by, like switch the screens real quick, or drive around and do like fake sales calls. Like, fake sales calls for entrepreneur don't work because it doesn't pay the bills. Right. So what I have found to be successful, and if I'm going towards faction, is I found success in life by using mentors and coaches.
Okay.
And I'll start from early on. So my father passed away when I was 7 years old. I was the oldest boy in the house. And it was kind of like, if you want it, figure it out. You want a new skateboard? Yeah. They cost $100. You got $100? No. Okay. Well, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to get a paper route. And so I figured out early on, like, if this, then that. And I was lucky that I had a series of strong mentors in my life that were like, hey, you have enough athletic potential. Like, let's put you on this team. Let's put you on this team. Hey, I'm going to recommend you come over here. Let me show you. Let me train you. I had individuals, Gary Shires, my next door neighbor, took me on and said, hey, I was a former track guy in college and I see a lot in you. Let me pour into you. So after track practice, I'll work with you for free. I didn't have any money. And with his extra training, I was able to be like an all-state, you know, scholarship level player, which opened the door for me to say, oh, I have a talent here. A guy my mom was dating at the time became our high school football coach. Super weird thing to do, right? And he's like, let's work extra time because if you can get this skill and this skill up higher, you can get a scholarship. We do that. I go on and get my scholarship. I go to a junior college. I'm at the junior college. And after my first year, the coach leaves and goes to another school. And a new coach comes in. And the previous coach said, hey, follow me over to this other school, small school out in New Mexico. Great opportunity. Super appreciative. And he goes, if you work a little harder, I'll get you a scholarship to Big Ten, Pac-10, SEC. You have that potential. So I said, I'm going to do that. So I pour in. Then I go to the University of Iowa. And I do my things there and I graduate. And I didn't truly intend on going to the NFL afterwards. I mean, for people that are thinking, hey, I'm going to go to the NFL, like, let me remind you this. Like, there's like 1,500 active players in the NFL. And all of the positions are taken right now. And for you to get in means you have to move somebody out of the NFL. There's no new jobs that open up, right? Like, every roster spot is filled right now. And for you to get into the on a team, it means that you have to be good enough to kick somebody out of the league to make a spot for you, right? Weird, wow. Weird thing.
Like, yeah, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, and there's only 1,500 spots. Like, that's the freshman class at Highland High School in the world, right?
Yeah.
It's not a lot. So I go through college and I was like, yeah, you know, if the NFL happens, great, but like, it wasn't my absolute pipe dream. And Chuck Long, guy that was second in the Heisman Trophy runner-up to Bo Jackson, calls me up and goes, hey, man, you're going to regret it if you don't run for these guys and blah, 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 whatever. Will you please come back and run for these teams that have coming in on pro day and all this stuff? And I say, okay. And then I go back, and then Detroit's like, hey, we're going to take you. And I go to Detroit, and a guy pulls me aside and says, hey, our starting tight ends are all like 6'6". You're barely 6'3". If you want to make this team, you really got to dial it in on special teams. Let me show you how to do that. So I make the team as a tight end, but basically as a special teams player. And then, you know, then I go and break my neck. And then the surgeon is like, hey, man, you should check out chiropractic. And then I go to chiropractic and I go to this guy's office and he's like, hey, man, you should go to school and be a chiropractor. So I've had a series of mentors when it's right, they showed up. And my advice to anybody in entrepreneurship in any capacity and at every level, from absolute beginner to like I'm an 8 or 9 figure guy, is don't be above coaching. Because if you're, I've talked to a couple of people who look at professional development clubs or coaching I call mine a Pro Dev Club because it just is a cool name. Like, I don't do life coaching because I think life coaching is weird sounding. We're a professional development group.
Yep.
And the network that I have is amazing. But when you say I'm above coaching, well, let me tell you like what circle you're not in. Every guy in SEAL Team 6 has a coach. Everybody in the NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball has a coach. Michael Jordan has a coach. LeBron James has a coach. If you're in jiu-jitsu, Gordon Ryan has a coach. Taylor Swift, if you're a Taylor Swift fan, has a singing coach. So when you get to where you're like, oh, I don't need a coach, I'm just going to go grit it out. Well, you're going off on your own and like, yeah. Good luck, right? Good luck, right? I hope it works out. Sometimes it does. Most of the times it doesn't. So I was fortunate enough to have enough mentors and coaches stack up for me because I was always looking for that it took me one step to the next step to the next step to the next step. So I spent basically from the time I was 7, we didn't have money for babysitters. So my mom would enroll me in like 2 baseball teams and a soccer team, like all at the same time.
That was
time.
The babysitting.
So I was like baseball at 3, baseball at 5, soccer at 7, you know? And it was a different time. We had to ride our bikes. Like we didn't get car rides to practices. And it is from that being coached my whole life and then pivoting and then going through, okay, now I'm a doctor and now I'm building entrepreneurial businesses and scaling businesses and exiting and then evolving into like an administrator and evolving into like CEOs of like large scale hospitals that I'm like, hey man, I've seen coaching and training and leadership from all sides.
Yeah.
Like I'm running SEAL Fit camps and running Spartan 7 shooting camps and doing my own triathlon clubs, and I've done 50 something
angle, man.
Triathlons, you know, like yeah. I've just done a lot of stuff. I'm currently still a jiu-jitsu instructor. I roll 4 nights a week. That's why this isn't herpes. I've like some guy put his tooth in my forehead 2 days ago. It's just what it is. But I'm a huge proponent of following coaches that have a proven track record. Like, listen, when you go hiking, you follow a path, right? You don't just arbitrarily say, I'm going to go north. Like if you were going to drive from here to New York, you wouldn't say to yourself, New York is east. I'm going to get in my car and blindly head east and hope I didn't hit New York. Mm. You're going to Google Maps and you're going to know exactly where your turns, where your stops, where your hotels, where you're going to get to and how long it's going to take and how you're going to get there. And an effective coach is that same person. Like, they're going to look, hey, what do you want to do, RJ? Hey, I want to open this construction company. Okay, cool. What's your experience? Da, 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 da. What does it look like in 6 months, a year? Okay, let's reverse engineer that back and then we can start to lay out the steps run a marathon or anything else. Same.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this is going to take us right into the Faction Foundation.
Yeah.
Because obviously, so one of the biggest things I've seen and I've experienced this myself is, and I guess I can get your opinion, is when people are looking for mentors and or coaches, which they're one and the same, what should they be looking for? Like, what do you look for when you're looking for a mentor? A lot of people will look for somebody that's like, hey, so-and-so has done something similar, but not necessarily what I've done. Would you recommend they go find somebody that actually has been in their shoes, done what they've done in order to help them expand? Or like, what qualifications do you think you should be looking for in a coach?
Sure. Substance over smoke, right? Okay. The greatest coaches don't always have the greatest social media presence. I'll show you the greatest Olympic weightlifting coach on the planet, and his website looks like his daughter in the third grade made it, right? And then I'll show you some guys on the gram that have the best website, slickest app, click funnels, and all this super amazing stuff to bring you in. And I know who they are, and I'm like, dude, you learned how to do that a year ago, right? So substance over smoke is number one. I'm a huge proponent of if somebody's done it, I'm interested in how they did it. If they've never done it and it's theoretical, I will listen because there's always pearls, but that's probably not who I'm going to choose, right? Like if I came to you and said, RJ, I want to coach you and I want to coach you on how to run your construction crew specifically on how to pour your foundation and how to put your tilt ups up and how to do this whole thing and the timeline of when you do the foundation to bringing in the tilt ups, to bolting it all together, to insulating. Like, listen, I've never done that. I am not the person that you should bring in to do that, right? But if you're saying, hey, I want to make sure that my team feels energized and they feel bought in and that their voices are heard and they feel like they're part of something bigger and I'm managing my equity, which that's a pearl itself.
Yeah.
Managing your equity. As that came out of my mouth, I'm like, I need to write that down.
That was good.
So your equity is your team.
Yep.
Right? That's your equity. And I guess you either manage them or they're managing you. So if you're managing them, you're a step in front of their game. You know where they're going. You know what they're supposed to do. You know their deliverables. And you are actually holding them accountable, which is the hardest thing in leadership is this. As a leader, it is not what you do. It is what you tolerate. Every leader has great ideas. And it's very easy to dispense, hey, look at my brilliant idea, and I'm going to do this, and look at my Gantt chart, and all this stuff. Awesome. Let me show you where the rubber meets the road. What are you going to tolerate? If the meeting starts at 6 and they come in at 6:01, are we good? And it may be totally acceptable, but as a leader, are you going to hold people accountable? Because that's the hard part of leadership that people don't want to face, is the accountability side and holding people like to the standard.
It's the uncomfortable part.
Well, like some of the greatest leaders that I know that come from, like, let's just say the military. I happen to know, and I'm very close friends with Brian Kontosh. You guys can look him up, Big Fish Foundation. Brian got the Navy Cross and Bronze Heart. And I'll tell you his war story, but that's a whole nother thing. And that's not what he would want anyway. But one of the greatest leaders I've ever met. And there should be movies and books about him, which he's just denying that he won't let people do that. And I live in that weird SEAL community, not because I am military, I'm not military. Different inroads. I hired Brian to come to one of my shooting events to be a lead instructor. I brought him in because the world in that regard knows who he is. As I'm making breakfast for the people, we're up in Idaho at this private black site range for the clients that we brought in, he's standing behind me taking out the trash and cleaning up my mess. And I'm like, Brian, they're all here to see you. You're the main attraction. Like, we told people you're here. Like, you're the Warren Buffett in the room. And he's like, yeah, but there's work to be done. And there's a standard. And I don't eat until all my guys eat. And I don't sit down until everything is put back together. And I don't rest until everything is done. And it doesn't matter.
It's amazing
what you do. I know you're putting me in that position and saying, go sit at the head of the table. I'm going to serve you. And you'll hold court. He's like, yeah, after everybody's eaten, I'll get a plate. When the kitchen's clean, I'll sit down. When the trash is taken out, like, I'll get comfortable. But until then, I'm going to do those things unasked. And you can't stop them anyway, because good luck, right? And that was like one of those moments that I was like, that's really interesting. And then we talked about it. And he was the one that told me, leadership isn't what you tell people to do. Leadership is like what you tolerate. Like, what will you allow in your presence? What's the standard that you hold?
That's huge.
And I said, well, that's impactful, right? And that's managing your equity. And so to come full circle with Faction Foundation is when I dove into my passion, going back to like exiting the hospital and saying like, where do I go from here, right? And I knew like, I want to be back with people. I don't want to go back and see them as patients again, because then I'm playing for the third party and I'm playing for insurance, which is a whole nother podcast where I'm like, hey man, I want to do this, but your insurance company pays for this. So I'm going to give you a lesser service. Whatever. Out of that. And I said, well, when was my life the most stress-free, where I felt like I was wide open, full throttle and just living? Okay. It's easy to say college or pro sports. But why is that? Well, very clear vision, a very clear plan, a very clear playbook that I could study from and understand what to do, how to do, then follow.
It's a roadmap.
A roadmap, a very clear coach that kept me lane lined within the plan and the playbook. And then highly and of huge importance is the locker room and the team that held me accountable, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm responsible for myself and Extreme Ownership and Jocko, and I know Jocko, and all that's great, right? But in reality, your teammates, iron sharpens iron. And when you're at that level, like in the NFL, like, you're not the biggest fish in the pond anymore, which is a whole nother thing. Like, if you're the biggest fish in the pond, you're in the wrong pond. Yeah. Get out of the pond immediately, because you're comfortable, right? Get in the pond where you're the smallest fish. And so what I set about doing was I started pouring all of my thoughts and all my principles into how I want to run this Faction Foundation. What does it look like, taste like? What's the plan? What's the vision? And then I built a playbook. And it was really important to me that I built a playbook, because I don't like talk. I like action.
Yeah.
And I don't want to talk about it. I want to be about it. So if I'm coaching you in a group setting, you have micro actions that I've gamified every day of the week to earn a certain amount of points. And when we get on a call, I'm going to go, RJ, you should earn 25 points this week. Where are you at? And if you come at me with 15, I'm going to be like, hey, group, let's coach him up. But what I also did, so I have plan, playbook, coach, obviously it's me, but the team and the tribe was very important to me. So what took me the longest was to go back to my team and tribe and to pull, like, there's guys in this that are Navy SEAL astronauts. Like, and you're like, really? Show up, find out. Spine surgeons, previous senators, doctors, lawyers, eight-figure, nine-figure exit guys. Like, that's the circle that I have as my team. And what I want to do, and the way that I like to be coached, is I'll show up and listen to the coach for sure. But I also want to be surrounded by people that are better, smarter, more knowledgeable than me as much as possible. I want to be in a circle where I have to work to keep up. So the hardest part about building Faction Foundation wasn't making my plan, and because it was very easy. I just broke down what are the main pillars for me, faith, family, fitness, finance, or the playbook, which when was life the easiest? When I was in college sports and I had the plan, playbook, coach, and a team. And the funny thing about that is, think about the infrastructure I told you at sports, right? Mm-hmm. I have all those tools.
Yep.
And it results in what? Wins and losses that are just lights on a scoreboard. And a week later, nobody cares.
Yeah.
20 points to 15 points. 5 catches, 2 touchdowns, whatever. A week later, a day later, 5 minutes later, nobody cares. And it doesn't mean anything. At the pro level, whatever, it's a little bit different. But ultimately, it doesn't mean anything to anybody. But then when you find yourself off of that train and you're not in the military, you're not in the team, you're not in high school, you don't have your career, you're not in pro sports anymore, and you're off that train because for me it was an injury, right? And that train is rolling and your boys are on that and you're not there anymore and you turn around and you're like, okay, well, what am I playing now? I'm not playing that. I'm playing the game of life. And in this game, wins and losses aren't your scoreboard. It's bankruptcy, divorce, suicide.
Stuff that hurts.
Yeah. It's real yeah. impact, like stuff that's real, right? And then you're like, okay, so where's the plan for this? Like, you started a company. Did somebody hand you a playbook and go, hey man, here's your step-by-step?
I wish.
You wish, right? And that's what you're doing now is saying, hey, let me give back, right? Because yeah. we realize how hard it is to do this. But I know what you've done. I don't know who you've done it with, but I'm going to guess you've surrounded yourself with people. I'm going to guess that you've brought a tribe together, and I'm going to guess that you find yourself in circles that you feel like you're working to keep up with, or with a coach, whether it's a group coach or an individual coach, somebody's holding you to task.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Well, that's you have now a plan, a playbook, and a coach to go do the game of life. And one aspect of that is finance. And for you, I'm assuming this is you're the breadwinner of your family. I know your family. And you provide for not just yourself, but a lot of people. So finance is very important. A lot of people work for you.
It's extremely right? important.
Yeah. It's extremely important. And so your passion, to your point, may not just be construction, but entrepreneurship, of being able to give other people the opportunity to provide for their families too, right?
Yes.
And so that's when I've broken down, like, what do I coach from is the interweave and the interplay, like a Rubik's Cube of faith, family, fitness, and finance. And I made it as simple as possible and said, hey, listen, when it comes to faith, I think we should all have a moral compass. Mm. I think we should all have a true north, and my true north and yours don't have to be the same. You could be Jewish or Christian or Muslim or a Mormon or Catholic or Protestant or I don't care. It's not for me to judge who you are, what you are, and what faith you observe. However, I do believe that you should have some moral compass yeah. that keeps you in line, that you balance in your decisions against. And if you're not working towards that or thinking about it, then, like, how are you making sure that you're staying ethical, and how are you balancing the scales?
Yep.
And if you don't put intention into that daily, it's like anything else. Like, if you want to get stronger, you go to the weight
gym. Yeah.
And when you stop going to the weight room, you start to get weaker. So with your faith, if you worked out one time a week, would you get stronger? The answer is probably not. So when you go to church on a Sunday and you don't do anything else the rest of the week, you're at maintenance at best.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yep.
You're at maintenance at best. And I'm not saying give up your whole life and just go beat people over the head with a Bible, but, like, can you not can you not talk to the Lord and Savior in, like, 30 seconds in your car here and there? Can you not, like, say a prayer with people? Can you, and are you setting the standard that you're willing to do the things that you believe in? Like, would you openly pray in front of people? Would you ask other people to pray for you? And I'm not putting you on the spot, but it lets you know in your heart, like, where are you at? And if the answer yep. is no, I'm going to tell you, get outside your comfort zone and grow, right? Don't be comfortable. If that's your faith and you believe in it, like, expand it. you did that as a missionary. And you're like, yeah, man, I did this for 2 years. Like, I understand what that feels like.
Yes.
So I'm preaching to the choir right here. But and then I go into the so underneath faith, and I definitely put that first for a reason, is family. Because without family, like, I believe I was put here to guide, lead, protect, and serve the dispensation as a patriarch to my family.
Yeah, it's your right? purpose, yep.
And that's what I believe. Doesn't mean it's right or wrong or different. It's what I believe makes me happy, whatever. Not misogynistic. Plenty of women are breadwinners and everything's great. It's equal. Like, all of my top executives are always women as well, and they're amazing. We're equal. But for me and my role, and the role that I signed up for, is I am the, you know, co-head of the family with my wife. And that is my number one, right? And that means I need to touch base and be intentional every day. And which goes into the, you know, another derivative of lesson is a quality over quantity. Like, listen, I know you work 80 hours a week. You work your tail off. Like, everybody in the family knows that you're running and gunning and hustling and working all the time. Because it's who you are. It's where you're at in the stage of your life. You're trying to build an empire to serve your clients and to bring in staff and give them opportunity. And that's where your passion and entrepreneurship. And I totally get that and I respect it. But then you go home and you're like, if I gave 10 hours to work and my kids are awake an hour before I leave and an hour after I get home, how do you balance that scale?
Yes.
Right? How do you balance it? And yeah. I'm going to tell you, you can't do an hours for hours, right?
Doesn't work.
So you have to take quality over quantity. Mm. And if you're going to say quality over quantity, that means to make quality, the more intention you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it and the more you'll come closer to balancing the scale. It's like you can be with your wife on your phone watching Netflix, BS, or you can intentionally be with your wife and, like, eye to eye, consciousness to consciousness, locked in, and be an absolute present and listening and talking and being 100% involved. And time is a perception, right? Like, imagine how much time goes by when you're at your favorite rock concert or you're on a roller coaster or something amazing. Flies, yeah. A boom.
Yeah.
Okay. How about when when you're stuck in traffic and you gotta poop? Like, time, like 5 seconds, and you're like, oh my gosh, like, it's terrible, right? Yeah. It's totally different. Or you're standing in line for the bank, or you're late for a flight or something.
Yes. Yeah.
So time is a perception, and we know that.
Yeah.
And we know that if I'm intentional about my actions, and I have even so much as a small plan, that when I show up for my wife or my kids or the people that I love that are special, I give them that opportunity to make sure they know that I care about them. And as a result, I'm filling in quality where I don't have the option to do quantity, because that quantity of time is required somewhere else, right? And that's really what Faction Foundation is that whole Rubik's Cube. And then the next piece would be fitness, right? Faith, yeah. Family, fitness, and finance. Like, if you're not healthy, you're not generating. If you're not generating, this company goes down. If this company goes down, all of these people you have working in here and this beautiful empire you're building starts to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when I run into these CEOs, which is very common in healthcare,
yeah,
and I'm like, what do you mean you don't go to the gym and work out? And they're like, I don't have time. I said, you're going to have time when you have a heart attack. You're just not going to have a job anymore. Like, you're going to have time when the diabetes kicks in. You're going to have time when you get, you know, congestive heart failure. You're going to have time when you do all this. I said, just, you have to find time, and we all have it. Mm. We lie to ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I work required. No. Listen. Talked to a guy last week. Hey, man, I'm coaching. He totally didn't do anything working out last week. Hey, I was on the road. I was in and out of hotels every week or every day. I said, okay, cool. So you couldn't get 5 minutes of exercise in? No, dude, I couldn't find a gym. I was like, did they have gravity at the hotel that you stayed at? And he was like, yeah. I was like, do they have a floor in the room that you stayed at with the gravity? Yeah. I said, did you forget about push-ups or air squats? He's like, man, I never thought about that. Which, I wasn't busting him. But that's coaching, right? That's like him going, dude, in my mind, I had to go to the gym, but I didn't realize I could, you want to do something hard? Get on the floor and stand up 100 times. Lay on the floor, stand up, lay on the floor, stand up. You're going to be sweating.
Go for a walk.
Go for a walk, right? But then what's cool is, and I say, you know, if you're going to follow a coach, do a be there, done there person. So yeah, I understand the physical side, pro athlete, doctor, all that kind of stuff over here. But the mental health, bro, is a whole new paradigm for me that I dove into, you know, 5-6 years ago. Didn't understand it, even though I've been in healthcare forever. I have an absolute appreciation for it. Depression is real. Anxiety is real. PTSD, emotional and developmental trauma, is real. Addiction is real. I have empathy for people with addiction. I don't look down on them anymore. I understand it is a diseased brain state. Listen, alcoholics don't want to wake up and drink all day. Drug addicts don't want to steal the china out of their grandma's, you know, storeroom to just say like, oh, I want to destroy my family today. Like, I woke up and I figured I can destroy my family by stealing money out of my dad's safe and buying drugs. They don't want that either. And we at society still look at that as like a choice. Because we look at like diabetes or cancer. Like, you don't get to go, hey man, tomorrow I'm not going to have cancer. The way that you would look at an alcoholic and be like, well, just don't pick up a drink. You don't be an alcoholic anymore. Like, it just doesn't work that way. But now that I understand that, there's a hygiene to it. Like, hey, keep it in check. Like, make sure that your optics stay clear. Like, it's a control. Lot of mental health is how you observe your surroundings. Because the story with David.
Yeah.
He was depressed. We changed his perspective, half empty, half full, gave him a moral compass. His depression went away. He had purpose, right? So understanding mental health and putting time into that is great. And for anybody listening, like, if you want to know like a very simple thing, is do like a 2-minute gratitude journal in the morning. You don't have to share it with anybody, but actually write out like, oh, I have nothing to write about. Do you have a roof over your head? Yeah. I'll give you a great gratitude story. I'm at no shortage of stories, by the way. Your producer's like,
this is great.
Can we ever stop this thing? Listen, we'll make it a 2-part. How about that? So I'm at a Navy SEAL inspired camp run by SEALs, but it's civilian-esque. And it's been 2 days in and we've been wet and sandy, whatever. I'm on the instructor side. And this kid, limps over to me and he's feeling sorry for himself. And I get it. Like, I've been there. Like, it's this sucks. Like, we start with 50 people, tough, like 12 people usually make it. It sucks and it's meant to suck. And he's like, instructor Price, I can't go anymore. I can't do anymore. Well, what's up, man? My feet are bloody. I literally can't walk. My whole foot is a blister. Like, let me show you how bad it is. Sits down, takes his boot off. And like, honest to goodness, it looked like somebody took like a potato peeler and just took the bottom of his foot off, right? When you're wet and sandy for 3 days, like, bad stuff happened to your feet, especially if you don't take care of your feet.
Yeah.
And so, and he's feeling sorry for himself. And in his mind, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to him. It's perspective. This is his worst. He hit his threshold of the worst pain and the worst time he's ever had and the most down and the most whatever. So I called instructor Ferris over. Hey, Ferris, you know, this guy wants to quit, this and that, and the other thing. I'm going to go run this evolution. Can you deal with this? Ferris is like, yeah, man, I got you. Ferris, a former Marine. You'll hear his story in a second. But Ferris looks down and goes, what's going on, man? And the guy's like, dude, I got these blisters and like it hurts to walk. And Ferris goes, okay. He goes, that's the worst thing that's ever happened to you. The guy's like, dude, it's so bad. Coach, I can't do it. And Ferris lifts up his pants and goes, it could be worse, and shows his artificial leg and says, I will trade you your blisters for this leg right here, right now. And the guy's like, we're good. Sock on, boot on, finishes the camp. Perspective, right?
Yep.
Just changing the perspective. And so a lot of what we do when we gratitude journal is take stock of what is working, because it changes the lens on how you see the world. And if you can change the lens on how you see the world, you see opportunity. You see like, how can I get in and fit in and help? Versus like, I'm in defense mode and poor me and everything's against me or whatever all the time. And then the last part is finance. Like, yeah, I'd love to chase my dreams, but you have to be responsible too. Yeah. And it has to monetize. And if it doesn't make sense and you go bankrupt doing it, like, there's going to be people out there that's like, oh, chase your dreams no matter what. I'm like, okay, great. But you still have to pay the car payment. You have a cell phone payment. You have a house payment. You have kids that want clothing and food.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So put yourself in a position, like, start with as close to your dream as possible, work your butt off. And like, listen, if you want to be an entrepreneur and you're not an entrepreneur right now, on the side, on weekends, on your other hours, build your project alongside you until the main thing that you have going doesn't have to be the main thing anymore, because you can switch and going into entrepreneurship. But I think it is a little bit silly to say, oh, I have no experience on anything. I'm just going to be an entrepreneur. I'm going to start a business. Awesome. Do you have $100,000 like liquid ready to burn? Do you have a coach? Do you have a mentor? Do you have a plan? Do you have a playbook? Do you have somebody that's done this before you that's holding your hand and guiding you and taking you there? No. Okay, so you're just going to drive to New York by saying, I'm going to head east. Do you realize, like, and I think Uchtdorf said this, like, at conference maybe 8 years ago. He gave a story. An airplane leaves Los Angeles for New York and is off by 1 degree. Just 1 degree.
Yeah.
They land in South Carolina.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're only off by 1 degree.
Which is nothing.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
It's a big difference, right? Yeah. So anyway, all as much to say, that's kind of the premise of it.
First of all, I feel like I'm like not even in a podcast. I'm just in school. I'm just learning.
I tell you, the microphone hog issue.
No, it's not an issue. It's phenomenal. Let me ask you this. So, and this is, I guess, right now, coach, client.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things the world has taught me or shown me, social media and stuff growing up, is like, hey, men have to be tough, right? Mm-hmm. And so recently, over the last few years, I've seen a lot more videos of like, hey, it's okay to have issues. It's okay to not have to be tough all the time, right? And be able to understand that sometimes we have to take care of ourselves. And in entrepreneurship, one of the things that I've experienced is it's consistent helping others, it's consistent worrying about others. And a lot of times, like, I'll forget to worry about myself, mm-hmm. right? And what that does is all that stress, all that anxiety builds up, and then finally there's a breaking point, right? Mm-hmm. Then that breaking point passes, and then it just happens over and over again. Mm-hmm. What would be your advice, in specifically in the entrepreneurship world, what's your advice to be able to manage that stress and that anxiety, being able to, so I think a mentor really helps, right? Being able to actually have someone to talk to. But if you don't have a mentor, mm-hmm. what options are there to be sure. able to understand that threshold?
Big question to unpack again. So you started off with the great leadership is leaders eat last. Hmm. So what you just said is you wake up every day thinking, how do I support, endorse, and take care of my team? How do I support, endorse, and take care of my family? And then before you have a time to think through, how do I endorse and support and take care of RJ, you're probably going to bed.
Yeah.
And then the day starts over and you go, how do I take care of my family? How do I care of my business? How do I take care of my team? And then by the time you go to bed, as you drift off, you're like, I should probably do something about RJ. And you fall off.
Yeah.
And what I have found is we all have time for whatever we want to have time for, right?
Okay.
And as such, I would recommend every entrepreneur, especially if we're talking about like the stereotypical alpha male who you're talking about, like, listen, I like fighting. I've been doing jiu-jitsu for 20 years, played football. Like, I enjoy it. I don't do it because I like to be a tough guy. I like the puzzle side of it.
Yeah.
But I still like to play rough. I like that. I like to bang guns. It's fun for me. I don't have any desire to go shoot people. I have no desire to play war. I don't want to go ever be in a gun battle with anybody. But I like to do that kind of stuff. So from the outside looking in and lift weights and all that, at 6'4", 240 pounds, you might think, you know, like, he's a tough guy, right?
You look pretty tough.
Maybe. Like, I just drained my ear a week ago again, so I'm trying to look less tough. But here's what I've learned about toughness, and I'm going to tackle one of these questions at a time. Toughness is the ability to get outside of your comfort zone. Like, that's toughness to me. Because if, like, imaginarily, draw a circle, put a dot in the middle. That's you. The circle is the margin of your experience. So whatever you've done is where that circle is. And you live inside of that. That's called your comfort zone. And we all talk about personal growth. And we say that you fail at the margin of your experience. And that margin is that actual diameter of the circle. So you have to become uncomfortable and go outside of that circle to experience growth, right? Yeah.
Yep.
And You should have a group of people or a person or a book or something that compels you and gives you fuel, because you've used a lot of your fuel to take care of your people and your family. And when we leave it up to ourselves, it becomes very easy to say, I'll take care of me tomorrow. And it is a very leadership mentality to make sure that everybody's taken care of. And then you, to your point, leaders eat last. And what you're saying is when I talk to true leaders, they ask me this, right? So I'm going to applaud you on the question. And my response to that is, put yourself in a circle that's going to hold you accountable to do the micro actions daily to ensure that you stay on the beam so you can continue following your passion, which is not necessarily the product of construction, but the end results of creating dreams for people and supplying employment opportunities and putting money in your family's bank to provide their future. Those are your, that's what your passion is, right?
Yes.
And you're doing it with a lot of family and a lot of friends, like your best friends on the other side of camera right now. Like, you're doing all the things we're talking about, but as a leader, I would recommend, like, make sure that you have somebody that is in leadership of where you're going and is holding you accountable the way that you hold your teams accountable. Because you probably came up in sports. You came up through the church. You developed this company. Like, and I know how you did it. You bootstrapped it and pulled it up and just said, I'm going to figure it out. And you did. And you did a dang good job. And you get to this position where you wake up one day and you have 100, you have 50, you have 100, you have 200, 500 employees. And then you turn around and you're like, I have a family and I have all these children. And you're like in the pyramid, you're the top. There's nobody above you, right? So yes, we look to God for sure. And we look to the scripture for sure for strength and guidance, 100%. But who's calling you every day and checking in? Hey man, how you doing?
Yeah.
Hey, my team, I don't care about your team. Yeah, dude, I don't care about your job. How are you doing? And what I have found toughness is when you can look another man in the eye and be like, hey man, I care about you and I love you. When you can tell another grown man that you love them on the phone because like they're your brother, that's toughness to me, because that's saying I'm big enough to go so far out of my comfort zone, because as alpha males, it is not inherent for us to show compassion. It is also not inherent for us to show weakness.
Yeah.
It is not inherent for me to raise my hand and say, hey, I'm suffering from depression. I'm having anxiety issues. I had a panic attack, because we look vulnerable.
Yeah.
And in the competitive landscape that we live in, we think that we're going to look like prey and the world's going to come after us.
Yep.
And I 100% agree with that. And someday that stereotype's going to change, but that's not today and it's probably not in our lifetime. So how do you deal with it? The toughest people I know, and I'm going to go to actual war heroes, and without dropping names on them, we'll talk about it after the podcast. But I'm talking about like the Bin Laden mission guys, and the guys are tip of the spear. Their toughness is when they call me and just say, how you doing? And I'm like, well, my job, I don't care about that. How are you doing? And they want to ask me questions, and then they want to tell me, hey man, I've been feeling depressed and I'm a little down, like, and ask me like, hey, how do you think I should get out of this funk? Totally vulnerable. I'm like, yeah. Dude, they, you're literally in a movie. You literally have books about you. Like, you're a best-selling author on the crazy war stories, and the people look at you like you're the toughest person on planet Earth, and you're telling me about depression. Like, I almost can't let that out. It would change. And he's like, oh, I want the world to know. Like, I want the world to know that we all have breakdowns here and there, and we all could use each other. So RJ, in your position, I would say find a tribe of human beings that's going to hold you accountable to the timeline that you can allow for.
That's solid. Wow. This is crazy. You know what? So just for everybody to know, so Derek is my wife's uncle. So therefore my uncle. And to be honest, I've never really actually sat down and had a heart-to-heart conversation.
As long as we've ever talked.
Yeah, this is the longest we've ever talked. And so I'm sitting here, I'm just dumbfounded at all these things that you're saying. And I mean, the biggest impact here is, you know, you're talking about, you know, entrepreneurship and then addiction and mental health. And I think that the biggest thing for me here is really truly the mental health. Like, from growing up, I was born into this family that was very, I would say, ordinary, but my dad, he owned a business. Okay. So he was successful, and he was the guy that everybody wanted to meet, everybody wanted to go to, the guy that everybody relied on. And so I naturally became that person that just relied on my dad, that if anything happened, I'd be able to go to him. And that's not wrong. He's a father, right? And he's supposed to be that way. 2008 happened and his business started going down. So he succumbed to drugs and a huge drug addiction. And so did my mom. And so, you know, that was all of a sudden, okay, now it's, you know, kind of similar, not so much, but, you know, parents were just gone and I had to be the person that was kind of in control, and I had to figure out what to do next. And throughout this entire journey, throughout the entrepreneurship and getting married, going on a mission, all this kind of stuff, I've never once sat down, I think, until this moment, and really been like, am I okay? And so, like, I kind of get emotional right now because all this stuff you're talking about, yeah, it is real. And you know, for me, I've always been a person, which I'm sure so many people that are, you know, in the entrepreneur, just like, you know, building companies, it's so hard to focus on yourself because there's so much to be done and there's so much other people to help, because the picture is always grander. It's always mm-hmm. bigger. It's not just, sometimes it's about the money for people, but a lot of times it's not. And it's just so, I mean, this is gold. It's so important to be able to step back, be able to be coachable, be able to understand that there are other people out there that care, that want to help you. And by allowing yourself to accept that help, you are going to progress even further in life. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, I guess, in a nutshell what I'm taking, but I mean, I'm just taking a lot in. This is awesome. This is awesome.
Yeah, man. I'm a fire hydrant once you give me a microphone, yeah, man.
Great. I'm going to need more than an hour with you. So yeah, the Faction Foundation, I think I speak for a lot of people right now, is how do people get involved with that?
So first things first is I officially launched June 10th. Okay. So right now I've done some warm leads, and I'll go quickly. It was important for me before I opened the doors of my deliverables to have a very clear plan. Mm-hmm. Faith, family, fitness, finance, and the derivatives of, cool, got my plan. My playbook, which is a gamified micro actions to keep you on that beam where you earn a point every day in that category, not just through what I exactly tell you to do, but I live by what doesn't challenge you doesn't change you. So I'm not going to tell you to run a mile. I'm going to say do something physically fit that pushes you at 1% outside of your bubble. Give yourself a point for that. The coach, which... That's going to be me for right now. Like when we scale and there's thousands of people, I'm going to have to bring in more coaches. So I'm going to build and cultivate coaches, and I have a solid team, which leads me to the team. So before I opened, it was important, and this was the hardest part. I had to go around the world and recruit about 25 to 30 guys who are mentors of mine, guys I've looked up to, guys I've coached with, guys like I told you about that are tip of the spear of the military, pro athletes, nine-figure CEO guys, in a nice cornucopia of different types of human beings, black, white, purple, male, female, like whatever, don't care, right? Like, but they have to bring something to the table, because like, let's say RJ, you come in and like, you're my first paying client, right? I told you, you're going to get a team, a playbook, a plan, and a coach. And when you show up on that call, like I want you to come into a call where you're like, I'm the smallest fish in this room.
Right.
And I see great value in this. Like 100%. The men that are speaking and the women that are speaking on this run nine-figure companies. The people in here have had eight and nine-figure exits. The people in here are doctors and surgeons and lawyers and construction guys. And they're just, they bring a skill set. Like that's my crew, right? So now that I have all those pieces in place, like I am now saying, okay, soft launch, like go to thefactionfoundation.com. Watch my story, which if you listen to this, you don't have to. And click through and just get on an onboarding call. I get on the phone with you and we have to make sure it's a good match. Like right. You ask me the question, like, listen, I'm not the right size shoe for every foot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm the right size shoe for the people that I know I can move the needle on. So I do a deep assessment on the front and I get it quantified by points. And then we run 90 days. And I'm having you do these things like a weight loss. Like if I'm doing a weight loss thing, I want to know your weight today. I want to do this program. I want to weigh you here and see the change. I don't want to just hear the I feel better stuff.
Right.
And I'm going to score you again. And then outside of that, we do summits and we do adventures. And I take my teams and we go into Patagonia and Argentina. We do shooting adventures. We do all kinds of like crazy fun stuff. And sweet. It's very much of a big boy community filled with women and men, where you can come into a locker room type mentality that's led by a coach, plan, playbook, and you can be real and raw and you can say, hey man, like I'm having a terrible day and I'm depressed and this is what's going on in my world, without having your staff and everybody else there. And you're going to talk to other people that are going through the same stuff you are.
It's amazing.
So that's what we bring to the table.
So do you have a set cost or is it based on the initial?
Yeah, no. So I have a one-on-one cost, but that's $75,000 a year and up. People take advantage of that all the time.
Yeah.
And I love it for that particular client. And I have to really make sure that I can deliver when we get to that level.
Right.
What I advise for everybody is put your toe in the water into the group coaching, because I see the most value. And I try and steer people away from one-on-one coaching back to the group. But some people are just like, I just want you and it is what it is. But the group and the plan and the playbook is where the power is. Because it really sets forth the micro actions and micro intentions that you're doing every day that build habitually. And all of a sudden you find in 90 days, oh, I am praying. I am reading the scripture. I am going to the gym. I am looking at my nutrition. I am being intentional with my wife. I am finding time to make breakfast for my kids. I am doing this. And then even cooler, man, is when the families get involved and your kids are like, what are you doing? You're like, hey, I'm trying to get earn a fitness point. And they come to you when you get home and you're tired and you don't want to do it. And they're like, dad, let's do push-ups when we get a fitness point. Or your wife comes to you and she's like, hey, let's read scripture together. Like, that's what brings it all together, yeah. Right? Yeah. And we get tired because, like, listen, here's the reality. As a CEO, I answer 1,000 questions a day like this. But guess what happens when I get home and talk to my wife? Do you think she wants me to answer questions like this? She doesn't want me to answer any question. She wants to talk and me to just do, yeah. But I come home in that CEO mode and I'm like, pop, 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 pop.
It's hard to turn it off.
So I have to be very intentional about, I'm not her boss. I'm not her CEO. I'm her equal. I'm her partner. And I'm here to listen to her and be present and not just bounce responses back. So I don't know, in a nutshell, I think that the best place to start is in that group side. In that group side, you're looking at under $2,000 a month to be in those types of groups. Totally affordable. And the reality is if somebody came to me and they're like, hey man, I need to be in this and I can't swing it. I didn't get in this for the money. I have enough money to pay my bills. I get this to like change human beings. So well, whoever judges this and whatever faith we all subscribe to at the end of the day, my goal is that when I leave this earth and I go to the next place, that they're going to look at me and go, hey man, you weren't perfect, but you were trying.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's amazing. So thefoundationfaction.com, is that correct?
The Faction Foundation. The we faction just call it The Faction, Faction, but I couldn't buy the domain name because some random group already took it. So we had to buy The Faction Foundation, but yeah.
Why'd you name it that?
Because the faction, I break down the four F's into their each their own subcategory, but yet they all tie together.
Oh, the right? Finance. The,
yeah. Faith, family, fitness, and finance. It all pulls together. So there's factions in this life and we get wildly out of balance. And really what I really, if you want to know what's the one problem I really solve is how to balance it all. Mm. How do I have a life of abundance that stays in balance? How do I make 8 figures and have a wife that wants me, doesn't just need me for my paycheck? How do I make 8 figures, have a family life that I want, and stay physically fit and mentally sound to be able to keep up with it? And how do I do that and keep it all framed in under the lane lines of the morality of the faith that I've chosen to walk? Like, how do you do all that? Because it's like helicopter blades. It doesn't fly if one blade's longer than the other. So if my finance is way out here and my family is here, like if I score 100 in finance and a 20 in family, like, yeah, I'm not in financial poverty, but you're going to get a divorce. You're in family poverty. You're going to have kids who don't want you anymore. You know what I mean? So it's the real world consequence of saying like everything in balance works and you can grow it all in abundance. Don't be afraid to grow your spirituality. Don't be afraid to grow your family bonds. Don't be afraid to grow your fitness. Explore new things. Don't just think that the wins and losses are chalked up because of how much money you have or don't have in the bank. I will walk you over to 9-figure guys that are miserable. They come to me for coaching.
That's amazing. You know, there's a difference. You know, I've talked to a lot of people and there's a difference when people have knowledge versus when people have wisdom. Mm-hmm. And everything you're saying is just wisdom. It's based off of real life experience, stuff you've been through, stuff you've learned, stuff that you put into play yourself. And you can sense that when you talk to you.
Oh, thank it's you, amazing. Man. I'll take it's that as a comment. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
I got one last question.
Yep. And from this is him running long, just in case. He's like, 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
He's getting a pre-session.
Well, I mean, this...
Well, I'm forcing him into the network. So, hey, for those of you guys who don't know, RJ will be a member of the Faction Foundation by this time next week.
Yes.
And if he's not, I want you all to write in and ask him, like, what's holding him back?
100%.
How about that for sales?
That's yeah,
like,
there you go.
I feel like now I'm at the dance. Like, dude, my kid goes to dance and they awarded her a solo when she was really young, brought her up on stage and like applauded her, the whole company. And then she hands me the certificate. Dad, look what I won. This is so great. They love me. And I flip it over and it's like, for $1,100 extra a month, your kid can do this. And I was like, I'm going to call them up. I was like, well played, dance company. Well
that's
played.
That's good. That's
well
good.
Played. Yeah, you that's sold my good. Daughter to her peers and didn't talk to mom and dad. You sent me the bill.
That
like,
might be a good way to get remodels, man.
I mean, right?
It's a good sales tactic.
Yeah.
So from this may be putting you on the spot or on the test, but I think you can handle it. If you had an opportunity to meet a stranger and that stranger's life was in complete chaos in every single aspect of all four Fs. There's four, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you had let's say 60 seconds to give them one piece of advice that could help them in all four sectors, what would that be? And take your time.
To know the solution, you have to identify the problem. In medicine, we call it diagnosing. You have to, in shooting, it's putting it front sight focus. It's getting your target reticle over it. You have to focus your energy, but you have to know what are you shooting at? What are you striving for? So in 60 seconds, I would say, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go home and define your issue. And define your issue and show and write out what it is today. Write out, if you do nothing different than what you're doing today, what does it look like in a year? Then I want you to write, what do you want to look like in a year? And what do you think you have to do to go from where you are to there to make that happen? And most people, they don't know what that bridge is. Like, here's problem, here's solution. There's a huge gap. And coaching is that gap, right? Coaching is that gap. Like, here's my problem. This is my hell island and this is my heaven island. How do I go from here to here? Like, I don't want to be here anymore. And I don't know the plan to get off this island. And I can see that if I was over here, like, I'm happy and everybody's smiling and things are great. I don't know how to go there. And that's where coaching comes in, right? But you have to know and be honest with yourself to where you're at. And if you do nothing different other than what you're doing now, like, is your situation getting better, worse, or staying the same? Because if it's getting better, then stay there and long enough, they'll come together. See where you're at. And then if you have no coaching, reverse engineer it down in steps that you can do. Very simple advice. If I asked your readers, right, or listeners right now, hey man, we're all going to go do a marathon. Who can do a marathon? Raise your hand. Nobody raises their hand. Okay. Who can do a half marathon? Nobody raises their hand. Okay. Who can do a 5K? A couple hands start coming up. I go, okay, check it out. Let's just go this. Who can take one step forward? 95% of people raise their hand. Okay, after that one step, hard stop. And I'm going to ask you the same question. Who can take one step forward? Oh, I can do that. Okay, cool. Hard stop. Let's do it again. Who can take one step forward? And do you see, if I keep doing that, I will do the marathon. But many of us look at eating the elephant in one bite and say, this is insurmountable. I can't do a marathon. Well, I said, well, can you do one step one time? Yeah, okay. Can you do it again? Yeah, okay. Can you do it again? Yeah. Okay. Can we take four steps? Yeah. Okay. And we'll get there, right? So be realistic. When you set your goals, when you set your plan, don't be grandiose. Don't be Instagram. Instagram is BS. When you see everybody's like fictitious life with the lighting and their irises are popped in the color and it's beautiful and their world is so much better than ours. Like, man, ain't real. They ain't real. And if it is, who cares? That's not your reality. So stay within your reality. Stay within your capabilities. Find people that are better at you, that have the right spiritual station, that want to help you and bring you along. Don't hook up with people that want to take from you. Remove toxicity. Go with the let them thought program. Like, people want to screw you over? Like, let them go. Let them go. Dump all the toxic stuff. Check it out. The only person that suffers when you've been wronged and you're still carrying that is you. That person, they're a scoundrel. They're already past it. They don't care about you. You're still thinking about it. Drop that rock. It's like carrying rocks around in your backpack. Like, nobody's going to give you a gold star for that. Nobody wants to hear about the things that happened to you in the past. Drop it. Get rid of it. You're just carrying burden around. Like, I know you're like, dude, I said 60 seconds. So identify problem, identify solution, reverse engineer the plan.
It's literally it's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Guys, if you get anything from this podcast, that is everything in a nutshell. That's where you start. I think that's the hardest part, is figuring out where to start and identifying, diagnosing the problems. Because whether it's in entrepreneurship or just everyday life, you run into problems and you have to figure out how to get over it. And when you can't, that's when people get depressed. It's when people they start backing down and they can't get through it. So that's phenomenal. Guys, we're going to have everything about the Faction Foundation below in the links. We're going to have all the social media tags below. You're also going to find our stuff. So do us a favor, subscribe, go to his stuff. One, if you're not joining the Faction Foundation, I don't know what you're going to be doing, because I can tell you right now, based off of this podcast, I am going to be joining 100%, and I'm super excited to see what the future holds with that. So thanks for joining the podcast, and we'll look forward to seeing you guys next time.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate it.